North Carolina Traditions. Frail Joins, Brushy Mountain Tale Teller of Wilkesboro.
Don't you go down there and cross that creek. He said, what's the matter? This mule scared of water? He said, Lord knows. Said, any fool knows that mule a whole lot rather fish than hunt.
That made me think of one. The guy had a dog, you know, and he got this old dog, and the old dog could walk on water. And oh, he was just all tickled death. He's a retriever, you know, he'd go a duck hunting. And when he shot a duck, that old dog, instead of swimming, just walk on the water and go out there and get that duck, you know, and come back with it. He had a hunting buddy, and he was just anxious for his hunting buddy to see what he'd say about this dog, you know. And took him out of hunting one day, and they shot hunting, shot several ducks, and the dog would walk out there and get it and come back, and the dog would walk out there and get it and come back, and the guy never said a word. Finally, this guy on the dog looked over and he said, did you notice anything strange about my dog? He said, yeah, I did. He said, he can't swim, can he?
What was that lesson with the worm?
Oh, Dad took me in there one time when I was little, and he said, son, said, I'm going to teach you something. He said, I want to show you something. He had two old red worms, old fishing worms, you know, and he took him a glass of water and a glass of liquor. And he dropped one of these worms down that glass of water, and it just swam on and on and on and on, you know. And he took the other, and he dropped it down in the glass of liquor, and it just died, just like that, you know. He said, now, I hope you got a lesson out of that. And I said, I did. And he said, what? I said, always drink plenty of good liquor, and you'll never have one. As I used to tell people, Dad always kept 5 gallons of liquor for snake bite, and I kept 2 snakes. He was a pretty good fella. He taught us kids to pay our debts. He worked us hard. And he loved his liquor. He'd go sometimes 3 days and wouldn't drink none. Sometimes he'd quit a whole week. When he'd get drunk, sometimes he'd stay drunk 6 months. He's awful good to put in a crop when I was right little. He'd work in every day and just push us and work till he got the corn planted and everything. And then he'd stay drunk and expect me to see if the other kids worked it, you know. And we'd have to work all that corn and take care of it, you know. And maybe I'd get out and plow all day, and he'd bring somebody in that night, 3 or 4 of them drinking, and they'd have 5 gallons of liquor. Yeah, and they'd get them a dipper, you know, and just cap the dipper over there, and every time one wanted to drink, pour out a dipper for, you know, and drink it, and pass it around. And Dad'd come in and have an old pistol, and when he'd get drunk, he'd start cussing his kinfolks, or usually my mother's kinfolks. And he'd say, yep, when I see that bird, said, I'll shoot him right between the eye, and he'd shoot the back stick, you know. And there's not a one of them but what he's killed 1,000 times. I'll guarantee you that. I don't know where he quit drinking liquor 1,000 times or not, but he killed every one of my mother's kin folks, and most of his 1,000 times. But he'd sit and shoot the back stick, and they'd sing, and they'd shoot, and they'd play the phonograph, and me trying to sleep, you know. And next morning, he'd say, son, it's time to get up and go to plowing. Time to get up and go to plowing. And every time they took a drink, come and shake you up. Do you want to drink a liquor? Take a drink of liquor. I don't even remember the first drink of liquor I ever took. I was so little that I couldn't tell you when I started drinking liquor, for I didn't remember. Thinking about, what was his name? He's a Robinson.
What, Cam Robinson?
Cam Robinson. Me and I stayed on the roof of Fletcher, we was picking apples, you know, and one day Roof got the paper out of the mailbox and was reading it at dinner time, and all at once he just fell off of the porch and the yard and just rolled and laughed. And I said, Roof, what in the world are you laughing so at? He said, I want you to read this in the paper. And he had a piece in the paper said that Grant Elliott, he was running for sheriff again, and he'd went out and spent the day with Cam Robinson and his God-fearing little wife. And Roof, what tickled Roof so good, me and him, as of this on Monday, but a Sunday, we was over across the mountain over the other side of ABC Orchard where we used to live. And we met Cam Robinson's wife and Ed Ashley's wife riding a little pair of brown mules that Cam had, you know, and both of them was drunk and their hair just stringing out in the wind, you know. Both had long hair and they usually kept it balled up on the back of their head, but it'd come down, you know, and it just strung out in the wind and it come way down below their waist.
Both of them had an awful head of hair. They'd run them little mules, and that hair would just stand straight back, you know, and both of them had a pistol strapped on them. Was hunting for them two damn son of a bitches gonna shoot him, you know? And Ruby wanted me to read that piece in the paper, and he said, God fearing little wife. I said, hellfire. He said, there wasn't a fear to man, God, nor the devil.
Used to be an old family that lived back up on the mountain named, old man was named Steve Roberts, and the boy was named Willie, and they had a girl named Leonie. And they was like me, they wasn't too bright. Had a yoke steer, and they started town one day, and they'd hard surfaced the road out to Fairplains, about 2 miles, I guess, from city limits out to Fairplains. It was cement, you know, and they put a white line right down the middle. And they come to that cement, you know, and Willie said, I got Pap. Said, whoa, whoa. Said, hold it. Said, what's the deal that down there? Said, what have they done to the road? And said, they got out, you know, and they looked, and they kicked that cement road and looked. And said, Willie said, what in the hell is that white line in the middle for, Pap? He said, damn fine. Oh, yes, I do, Willie. Said, my God. Said, buck on one side and bury on the other. And they straddled that white line with the old steers and went right down the road meeting cars, you know, and they just, it's narrow, it just barely was. Two cars to pass, and them was straddling it in the middle, you know. They're taking up the whole road, said Carter, run over on the shoulder road or getting around him, you know. Got down there and they saw a sign, said speed limit 15 mile an hour. Said, old man Steve said, Willie, whoa, whoa, said Willie, said, go down and cut me a damn good long switch. Said, I don't know whether we can make it or not. Said, by God, we'll give her a try. Got down there in town, you know, and the police, they started turning around on Main Street, and the police hollered, hey, hey, said, you can't turn around there. Oh, yeah, said, my God, I think I can make it. Said, whoa, come here, Blue. And said, they turned right around on Main Street, you know, and started back and said, well, I thought I could make it. I thought I could make it. I was sick, and Willie went to the store to give him some medicine one day, and it was raining, and Steve died while he was gone, you know. Said, Willie come back up, you know, and Leonie was standing door crying. He said, Leona, what's the matter? He said, Pap didn't go up and go and die while I was going to the store, did he? She said, yes, he did. He said, well, I'll be damned. So Mom said, Willie, said, you going to bury him over there in that flat? Hell no, he said, that'd make a good potato patch. I said, let's bury him up on that old dry ridge where there won't nothing grow. One time, was a bunch of us sitting out on the porch out there at Moravian. It was right in the forks of the road of 1816. They were sitting on the store porch there one Saturday evening. Durlo was out there at the forks of the road, and a car would come along going towards the north, and he'd run over and thumb, you know, and he'd go on by, and then one would come going towards North Wilkesboro right the other way, and he'd run over and thumb it. He'd go on. Another coming going towards Taylorville, and he'd run out there and thumb it, you know, and Rue Fletcher's about half drunk. He kept sitting there, turning his head and looking at Dewey, you know, and finally hollered out and said, hey, Dewey, just where in the hell are you wanting to go? Dewey said, any damn where.
Just turn right this side of where it says Elmer Lowe's Junk and Herbs. That street cuts right across there. Now, North Wilkesboro's on the other side of the river. And North Wilkesboro's always been the town. Wilkesboro was the county seat. And courthouse was about all there was to it. It had a motel and maybe a couple of two or three stores. But it never has grown very much and hasn't jittered as far as the town are growing. But North Wilkesboro is the one that's really growed. Get off on this road up here and turn left when you get up on the Oakwood Road. Well, where I got my name Frail at was a nickname from Fraley, you know. Fraley was the first nickname I got. I went through school with that name. And I didn't like the Fraley part. I didn't like that, you know, and they get to call me Fraley, well, I usually meant a fight. But the Frail was short of that, you know. They shortened it to Frail, and that's what I always went by.
Why'd they call you Fraley?
Well, there was an old man by the name of Jim Fraley and Nike Smithy opened a store up out here at Moravian the year I was born, 1914. And They was in partnership there, and old man Fraley was big, fat, and red-faced. Well, my uncle thought my mother was going to have twins, and he made a cradle big enough for twins. Well, I come along, he said I weighed about 14 pounds. And everybody said, well, he looks like old man Jim Fraley. I said, big and fat and red-faced, knowing they just got to call me Fraley. And I went through school. I didn't use my name until I went into the Army. I never used no nothing. It ain't a bit of record where I ever went to school one day. But when I got old enough to pay taxes, you know, I made the 12th John Jones in Wilkes County that was paying taxes. There was 12 of us. That was an old family name, and it was just handed right and left, you know, to the Joneses. Of course, right now, there's several of them died off. You see, my daddy's name was John, and all of John's was about his age. And they're about all died off now. There's not many John Joneses left in Wilkes. In fact, I don't know. I may be the last one. I don't know. I don't know of another one named John.
Well, that grave over there is my uncle that got died with in France in World War I, died with the flu. And this was one of my uncles who was got wounded in World War I. And he's one that Part T. Davis shot and killed. And that one down there was my last uncle to die. He was the best one I had. He accumulated the least, but he was the best. And that's my father's grave over yonder. And I reckon that's all that I know of. There's probably some more joints out there than them old stones, but I couldn't tell you which one. I know my great-grandfather was born down there at that old graveyard across from home. It's growed up, and my grandfather and my grandmother was buried over there at Walnut Grove Church. And they sort of scattered out. Well, the old joints, as they tell me, was easy to get along with and easy-going people, and the most of them that I find that wasn't akin to my father was pretty easy people. Everybody talks about them being nice people, you know, and easy to get along with. But my grandfather and his brother married some Indians from over in Tennessee, and they both raised large families, and they were always known for their fighting and fussing and couldn't get along and this, that, and the other. And if you put two of them together and give them a pint of liquor and they'd have a fight, if they hadn't seen one another in 20 years, they'd have a fight in less than an hour. They couldn't get along at all. And I don't know, I never did know my great-grandfather, old man Jackie Joins. But everybody tells me that I was just exactly like him. When I was little, all the old people say, you just like your great-grandfather, old man Jackie Joins. You don't look like the rest of them. And most of them was dark-skinned and black-headed and brown-eyed, but I come out a blonde and a blue-eyed in a bunch, you know. And I guess I was a throwback from the rest of them. And my grandfather on my mother's side was an awful easy-going, quiet old man, and he always told me, said, the Indian in the joint is what ruined all of them. And I don't know whether it ruined him or just give him a little backbone. I don't know what you'd call it. When I got old enough to start running around, I was joined as it was related to us back up around Trap Hill and up in there, and I got up in there running around, you know, and people say, where are you from? What's your name? I'm a Jones. Any kin to the Trap Hill joining? I say, a little bit far off. You're not no kin to them damn little fighting joiners over around Raven Falls, are you? And I'd say, yeah, my daddy's one of them.
Talking about my Uncle Bill, he left here and went out to Illinois. He's pretty mean. He got wounded in the Army and had part of his hip shot off. He left here and went out in Illinois and stayed a while. He come back and everybody was afraid of him in Code Lane. And so some of them was making liquor and they invited Bill down to steal a place, wanted to get rid of him. They thought they'd have him caught for making liquor and have him sent off for 2 or 3 years and get rid of him that long. Maybe go back out to Illinois. So they invited him into the steel place and then slipped around and approved it. And when Bill went in the steel place, why, the law was in there and they caught him and charged him with making liquor, you know.
But they made a mistake of telling him who reported the steel plate, and it was the very ones inviting him down to get some liquor. You know, told him he'd give him some liquor if he'd come down to the steel plate. So he got mad and said he's going to dry up Wilkes County. Well, back at that time, Wilkes County was known as the moonshine capital of the world. I think the government had about half of the revenue all in Wilkes County, all the U.S. government revenue they had, you know. So old Bill, he got him a horse, and little old field guy said he'd ride these ridges and he'd see a little puff of smoke come up. I'd back before he got to using coke or anything, you know, and every time he built a farm or a furnace, why, a little smoke would boil up, and he'd see it, and he knew the mountains good. And he'd go in and cut their steel, and they had copper steel. He didn't cut the steel. He just tear it out of the furnace and bring it down to my grandpa, and he'd get four or five, maybe six, and he'd send for the deputy marshal to come out and get them. Jim Bumgarner was deputy marshal. And I was just a little kid, but I remember Jim coming up there and he'd tie steels all over that buggy. He'd have five or six 50-gallon copper steels tied on it, you know. And he'd say, "Billy, when are you going to come down and give yourself up?" And Billy said, "As soon as I cut a few more damn steels, I'll be down one of these days." I know one of the Johnson boys told me that he heard his daddy and his uncle send Bill word. Bill sent him word he's coming over and cut the steel. He'd always tell him he's going to cut the steel before he cut it. And he's coming on Monday morning, and said they all sent him word if he did, he'd die. They'd kill him if he come down the valley up there. And these boys said they was all little, and they went over and laid behind a log and said, "Watch Bill ride down and whistling on his horse with a rifle on the saddle on him." Said he went in, tore the steel out of the furnace, and carried it back up the road on his horse, and said, "Mountain covered up with his uncles and his daddy." His uncle's up there and said, "Not a shot fired." Went on for several years before they ever got Bill, and everywhere he was going, he was in the fight with somebody. You know, they had 100 and some warrants for him over here at one time, and they tried him, and they gave him 6 months to be hired out. Jack Davis got up and swore he shot him between the eyes with a .45 pistol, and the bullet bounced back. George Ashley had a warrant out for him for beating him up with a pair of steel knucks. Said he come into his home, you know, and had a pair of steel knucks on his hand and liked to beat him to death. And Bill weighed about 140 pounds, and George weighed over 200, George Ashley, you know. And so George's lawyer asked him, said, "What'd you hit him with, Bill?" And Bill said, "I hit him with a fist. I didn't hit him with steel knucks." "You mean to stand there and tell me that a man your size could knock a man that big down with his fist? Do you expect the court to believe that?" Said, "Just how hard did you hit him?" Well, Bill was up in the witness chair, and his lawyer was about 6'4", and old Bill just hopped down right in front of him and hauled loose and knocked him about 10 foot out across the courtroom. He said, "I hit him about twice that hard." The lawyer tried to get the judge to do something with Bill, and he said, "He answered your question. Just go on, go ahead." Part T. Davis met him out there at Moravian one day and told him to come up. He had some good liquor. And so Bill went up there, and him and four or five more boys, and said when he got in the house, Part T. just grabbed his gun and told him every damn one to get out of there. And said that one boy said he run right out in front of the house behind the apple tree and turned around and watched him, and said Bill walked out down the yard and had his hands up in there and said, "Part T," said, "you asked me up here." Said, "I didn't come looking for no trouble." Part T shot him in the belly and shut the door, and they with a shotgun, and they got him up and carried him out there and crammed his guts back in him and rolled him a cigarette, and he laid there and died. But when I got to going around breaking these horses, you see, every time I went to a new little settlement to break a horse, there's always a bully there. There's one boy that everybody was afraid of. Well, when I first started, somebody would say something to me, I'd crawl him for a fight, you know. But if I got one way down the ladder, why, then the next and above him would try me, and then the next, and then the next, until I climbed to the top, you know. You know, you go around to Weenie Roast, and you go around to parties, you'd get invited to parties because you was a stranger, you know, and one thing and another. And back then, there's a lot of people, nearly every settlement had a group of boys that played fiddle, guitar, and things, and they'd have parties, and they'd drink, you know, and make music till wee hours in the morning, and dance, have barn dances, and one thing and another. Well, I soon found out if you started down on the ladder, you had to climb to the top of whipping these guys. Sometimes it got pretty rough if you had to whip about 15, you know, to get up to the top man. And so I got so I just play it like I was afraid, you know, until I found out who was the meanest guy and who everybody else was afraid with. And then I'd get around and let him run his mouth a little bit after he thought I was afraid because I hadn't said nothing. And I'd just force him into a fight almost. You know, you can do it without seeming to even have anything to do with it if you know the ropes. And so when you got the top guy and licked him, all the rest left you alone. You didn't have to bother with the small fry, you see. Well, you soon learn to take care of yourself. When you know you're there in a strange group, you ain't got no friends, you're just only by yourself, and if the man gets you down, he can beat you to death. You soon learn to take care of yourself or keep your mouth shut one, you know. And I never could keep my mouth shut. I always had a big mouth, you know. And by all you heard talked was how much liquor I can drink and who all I can whip. Now, you know, as of what the crowd that I associated with, that's all they studied. Once in a while, you get with a group that want to go see women and talk. Women, you know, but most of them was how much liquor I can drink. That was a big count of man. If you could drink a pint of liquor and then whip so-and-so, why, you was count of man, you see. And that was what the boys wanted to do, was be a man, you know. And so time my daddy run me off home when I was 13 years old, there wasn't very many men that tackled me for a fight. If you went to town on Saturday night, there was two or three restaurants down there, you know, we call one the Greasy Spoon. Beaches was the main, biggest place. And then there was a Snappy Lunch right across the street on 10th Street. And then there'd always just a little scatter around, you know, and maybe down the road and up the road and this, that, and the other place where people met and drunk and fought. Mm-hmm. Well, you go down there through the week, you hardly ever run into any trouble, you know. But on Saturday, these old boys would come down. Well, here was a little faction that had somebody nobody could whip, you know. And over here was another bunch, maybe seven or eight of them, all drinking, but they're all bullies. Well, you let them come in and get to drinking, and nothing do on just two fights. That's all they studied. Why, you could get a fight any Saturday night, and you could see one over here in North Wilkesboro about any Saturday night you wanted to. You see, when I was in Colorado, I told them how mean North Wilkesboro was, and everybody made fun of me, and I got a paper. You know, I was taking a little old county paper to printed twice a week. And John Walker was chief of police. And one time it had a big headline said and told how many they had arrested on Saturday night for fighting, you know, and cutting one another, and one or two had got shot. And said chief of police, John Walker, said it. Hitler might take Stalingrad, and he might take London, but he never take 10th Street on North Wilkesboro on Saturday night. Well, boy, I took that paper, and he, you know, I just, hey, boys, come here. I said, you don't believe I come from a rough place, you know, when I was in the Army out there, and everybody looked at that, and their eyes bugged out. That was unusual for something like that to make headlines in a paper, you know. But they was there in great big letters, you know. They really thought I was mean. Well, when I got overseas and got in France. We had a hospital sitting in France. They brought a boy up there, and he was unloading shells. He was in the Merchant Marine. He was unloading shells, and one went off in his hand and blowed his hands full of shrapnel. And his legs and his breast, you know, and he couldn't use his hand. Both of them was bandaged up, and he couldn't use his hand, and they brought him up to my ward. Well, some of them found out he'd been to North Wilkesboro. And, boy, they went and invited all around that knew me, you know, they could get that wasn't busy and come in and get him to tell him how mean North Wilkesboro was. And he's from Indiana. And he said, asked him, said, you ever been to North Wilkesboro? Yeah. Did you see this guy? Yeah. Well, me and him, we'd go to a bootlegging joint and sit and drink liquor and talk all night, you know, on Saturday night. He'd buy brains and eggs, hog brains and eggs, and I'd get a gallon of liquor, usually apple brandy. He loved brandy as good as I did. And I'd meet him at this bootlegging joint. Well, he'd have this old woman to fry eggs and brains, and we'd sit right there at the table and talk all night long and drink that brandy and eat them brains and eggs. And he said I was the only man that loved brains, eggs, and brandy as good as he did. And so he told him, he said, yes, me and him spent about every weekend together while I was up there. And they said, well, what kind of a town is it? And he said, oh, a little one-horse town. He said 3,000 or 4,000. Said they roll the streets up about 8 o'clock at night and close all the doors and said, cat and the dog can get in the fight. And said they'll call out the police department and the fire department and everybody in town will fall out to see the cat fight. They all laughed at me, you know. But he said, now that's through the week. He said, on Saturday night, he said, these old hillbillies come down through there and said, a lot of them are one gallus on and britches leg cut off halfway at their knees and them barefooted and their beard grew out about 6 or 8 inches long. And he said, each one with a pistol, and some of them two pistols, and a pint of liquor stuck in their pocket. Some of them got a half a gallon carrying in their hand, or a gallon jug with a grapevine through it swung over their shoulder, and said they go to meeting at the Snappy Lunch and at Beaches. And he said about 4 o'clock the next morning, he said, I've come up 10th Street there, and he said, blood and guts and shit would be waist deep on you. He said, you couldn't wade through it. He said, the police just go off and hide till Sunday morning. They go down and said, they get them up and bury the dead. Well, they all pulled out and left, just shook her head, you know, and got gone. He looked at me and said, did I make it bad enough? And I said, that'll do. I said, you done a pretty good job. Yes, Lord. What was you want me to tell Jerry about that you thought was...
Shooting the rats through the corn.
Oh, that's my daddy's first cousin and his brother, you know. Two of them, and one of them was drunk. And his wife was praying for him. And said, Lord, said, have mercy on poor Cal. And said, forgive him his sins and everything. Said, he's drunk. Cal said, hell, don't tell him I'm drunk. Tell him I'm sick. And then Tom, his brother, started praying for him one time, you know. He said, Lord, if they are Arn, if they're our Lord, you know, he said, have mercy on poor Tom's soul if he's got Arn. So he thought it's sort of a doubtful case. I had an uncle that was a preacher, you know. He got up one time, you could hear him preach for a mile. It wasn't no bit of trouble to be a mile from where he's preaching and hear every word of it and understand it, you know. He's up one night and he said, by golly, he said to the little ones, he said the young girls had used the flour on the back of their necks and the cream on their face, and the little ones at home were doing without bread and butter. He said, by golly, he said, heaven was a land of milk and honey. He said, all you had to do was just get a biscuit in each hand and wade and sop, wade and sop. I could just see a whole congregation of old farmers with a toe jam between their toes wading around through honey and butter and people sopping and eating. I didn't even want to go to heaven. I better quit talking about my kin folks.
Right.
They'll come back and haunt me once.
William and Bob Lane was drunk sitting down on William's porch, you know, and Bob said, William, did you see that chigger climbing that dead chestnut over on the mountain, an old dead chestnut about a mile over on the mountain, you know? And William said, no, I don't see him. My eyes is going to the Baptist. Said, I hear him a-walking.
Frail joins... Brushy Mountain Tale Teller of Wilkesboro was produced by Alan Tullis. The program is part of the North Carolina Folklife Media Project. The project director is Cece Conway for the Institute for Southern Studies. The technical director is Brett Sutton for WUNC-FM. Funding for the series is provided by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.